the globe as Iranians mark National Day of the Fight Against Global Arrogance. Hello everyone, and thank you for tuning in to World News. Death, devastation, and anguish are everywhere in the besieged Gaza Strip, where Palestinians are seeing no respite from Israel's relentless air and ground strikes. 15 Palestinians are killed and dozens injured in the latest Israeli strike on a UN school sheltering people from the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. 4 more Gazans are killed after Israeli bombs rained down on a residential building in Rafah. In Gaza City, an Israeli drone hit the home of leader of the Hamas resistance movement. Medical facilities are not safe from Israeli bombardment as well. Regime has targeted entrance of Al-Nasser Children's Hospital in western Gaza City, killing a number of people who had taken shelter there. Israel's war in Gaza is now in its 29th day. Total death toll has neared 9,500, most of them women and children. More than 24,000 people have also been injured thus far. The Hamas resistance movement has described Israel's strikes against hospitals as heinous crimes. Hamas says it holds U.S. and other Western countries responsible for attacks against Al-Shifa, Al-Quds, and Indonesian hospitals. Hamas added that open U.S. support for Israeli terrorism and silence from the international community are to blame for these massacres. Hamas said strikes indicate a plan to fully destroy the medical sector in the already devastated Gaza Strip. The resistance movement also warned of regime's plan to target more civilian infrastructure and medical facilities. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has conducted missile attacks against Tel Aviv and other areas of occupied territories. Missiles fired from the Hamas military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, hit Tel Aviv as well as Sderot and Netivot. That while resistance fighters continue to engage invading Israeli troops in several areas inside of Gaza, dealing heavy blows to them. Israeli military has confirmed that 4 more of its soldiers were killed overnight. According to Israeli media, 23 regime troops have been killed since expansion of ground raids in Gaza last Friday. Hamas, however, says the number of Israeli military casualties in Gaza is much higher than what the regime is announcing. Meanwhile, the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement says that Israel's war in Gaza must end immediately. Sayed Hassan Nasrallah said the first goal of resistance is ending Israeli onslaught, and second is to ensure the victory of resistance. He also said Israel cannot achieve its stated goals against the resistance, and the final victory belongs to Palestinians. Nasrallah said the Palestinian sacrifices will have a great impact on the future of the entire region. He said threats against Hezbollah by Israel and its main supporter, the U.S., will not change Lebanon's stance in supporting Palestinians. Nasrallah warned U.S. and Israel not to make any moves against Lebanon.
The behavior of the Zionist enemy towards Lebanon. Once again, I warned them from some of the bombings which targeted some civilians who fell as martyrs. This might lead us once again to strike a civilian if our civilians are striked. So, what the Israelis do towards Lebanon will also determine how we will act. I say very clearly, openly, and also with constructive ambiguity, I say that all options are on the table on the Lebanese front. I say that all options are on the table, and we can adopt any option at any time.
Nasrallah elaborated on the options by saying that Hezbollah is prepared to act against U.S. naval ships in the Mediterranean and is not intimidated by their presence. He said U.S. is entirely responsible for the war on Gaza and has called Israel merely an executive tool. Nasrallah also said that Hezbollah operations against Israel are significant and unprecedented. He added operations have forced Israel to divide its focus and troops and also result in the evacuation of dozens of settlements. And now joining us from London is Sayed Mohsen Abbas, a journalist and political commentator. Hello, Sayed. Always a pleasure to check in with you. Hope you're doing well. At least I'm sure you and I are much better than the people of Gaza. Your initial thoughts on what you walked away from by the Hezbollah leader's comments and statements and speech yesterday?
I think one walked away with the certitude that God is essentially a leader who is very grounded and very assured. And he also has absolutely no fear of what he's up against and reiterated that, not just to the Israelis, but he went for the jugular with the Americans. He pointed most of his volleys at the U.S. itself, its warships, its intent in the region, its responsibility for the war crimes in Palestine, in Gaza, with its full support of the Israeli genocidal war machine. So he's standing tall, and I think that emphasizing the fact that Hezbollah entered the war virtually the next day from the Al-Tufan, the Al-Aqsa Tufan, is a significant factor. That means that Lebanon is at war, Hezbollah is at war with Israel already. The war is taking the form of very measured and very calculated strikes and counter-strikes. The Israelis don't have the strength or the confidence to be able to go into Hezbollah territory and to try and take them out. They don't seem to want to do that. So this exchange of border firing, drone attacks and radar knockouts and attacks on Merkava tanks, these things have happened without a doubt and they will continue. But I think it's the fact that Hezbollah's threat is very much on the minds of the Americans and the Israelis, which is going to have a psychological play on the war, on the region as a whole. Half the naval forces of the West have been diverted, and of Israel have been diverted to the north, to the Lebanese front. A quarter of the air force is stationed and looking at that side of the border, but also got half their missile defenses, which have to be dedicated towards Lebanon. One third of the logistics of their armed forces are also dedicated to Hezbollah and the north. So you can see that the two or three divisions that have had to be stationed up in the north are a major support for the Palestinian resistance, in that Israel can't concentrate just on one front. They have to divide their attention, which is also part of the aiding of the Palestinian resistance. But the other thing that Hezbollah provides is a model. The Palestinian resistance, for the first time, is engaging on the ground with real on the ground warfare with the Israelis. We believe hundreds of Israelis have been killed. Soldiers have been killed since trying to go into Gaza. They're playing it down to 25 or 23, something like that. But the reality is that the Palestinian resistance is learning from Hezbollah. Hezbollah did this, and with no more than hundreds of fighters, they were taking on brigades. Entire brigades of Israel, when they tried to invade Lebanon in 2006, were opposed and taken out and defeated by a mere 100 or so soldiers with RPGs and anti-tank sort of weaponry. That was it. And that's exactly the model we're seeing in the defense of Gaza. And if this model continues and the same result happens as did in Lebanon those years ago, where Israel withdrew and could not go into its adventurism, then Palestinian resistance will have a credibility within itself that it can defend. Its people will have that much more confidence. And indeed, the Israeli civilians and the Israeli public will realize that Netanyahu's adventurism has cost them all of their sort of much vaunted mythical superiority and power in the area. So what we're seeing, I think, with Sayed Nasrallah is the acknowledgement that the beginning of the liberation of Palestine has truly begun in an armed struggle, and he is fully supportive of it.
And Sayed, when you mentioned 2006, how much do you think Hezbollah's fighting capacity has evolved since then?
Hugely, because since then, I would say that the arsenal of ballistic missiles and various other highly technical guided missile systems has been put in place. That wasn't there back in 2006. They have drone capability, so they can have very accurate suicide drones or attack drones which they can use. This technology didn't exist before. So on the one hand, Hezbollah is technologically far superior to what it was back then. The other aspect, of course, is that they have cyber surveillance and cyber warfare skills at their disposal. So they can also hit Israel within its infrastructure, its kind of its whole establishment infrastructure, whether it's jamming their systems or the radars, or whether it's attacking their installations that they know about, whether it's perhaps even the Dimona nuclear missile or a nuclear facility, if you like, that they have. All of these are within Hezbollah's reach and their target. And of course, the third aspect, other than these two, is that they now have a solid experience in an actual war. So whereas before they were kind of a sort of guerrilla army, a sort of hit and run outfit back in the 2006 period, now, having been in Syria, taken on the American-sponsored forces that tried to overthrow Assad, and having fought side by side with the Syrian army, they showed very quickly when they entered that conflict that they were very powerful. It was in fact Hezbollah interference in the north of Syria which actually prevented the collapse of many, many cities in that region. And in fact, the fight back and the defeat of ISIS began as Hezbollah entered that war, and they maintained that. They sacrificed many, many men, but that's made them, their soldiers, battle-hardened. They have strategic capabilities, coordinative ability on a vast scale as well in terms of war strategies. So what Israel is facing is an infinitely more powerful Hezbollah, and they know it. That's why they have had to call in the Americans to try and see if they can back them up. But you see, the Americans could be a bit of a paper tiger in itself, because Colonel McGregor, former Colonel McGregor of the U.S. Army, has been going quite regularly on air, and his evaluation and assessment about military capability of the Americans, given they're already engaged in Ukraine in a big way, is that he's not very confident that they can actually do the job that they say. They've barely been able to hold on to Iraq, keep a foothold in Syria. They're struggling to maintain those fronts as well. And at the same time, of course, they have the Russians to consider, because in this scenario, if the public pressure builds up, if Hezbollah and Palestinian resistance are seen to be the hope of the Arab and the hope of the resistance and the liberation of Palestine, then this puts pressure on these cowardly and collaborator regimes like Sisi's in Egypt, for instance, or Abdullah's in Jordan, or the bin Salman regime in Saudi Arabia. All of these are partners in crime. They are facilitating the American and the Israeli bombing of Gaza. For instance, just give you one example, Abdullah and bin Salman both have now created the opportunity for Americans to add more air defenses in order to prevent, say, for instance, the Yemenis sending ballistic missiles over Saudi Arabia to hit Israel. So you can see that actually Hezbollah has got a great fighting capability with all, and it's not just them. You've also got the Iraqi militias, the Hashdihabi, who are going to be based in Syria without a doubt. The Syrian army itself is certainly with the resistance axis. The Yemeni Ansarullah, which are dominating the civil war that's been going on in Yemen, because the Americans and the Saudis want to control Yemen for the last decade or more, they are involved as well. So what you're seeing is Israel is uniting the region. The only ones outside of this unity with the resistance are the puppets of America and Israel in that region. And they are going to come under pressure if they carry on ignoring the Palestinian plight. The question is, what will their public do? Will it cause problems for Sisi, Abdullah, and the like in their own countries? And if it is that they must get involved, then the minimum that they'll have to do is to at least stop supporting the Americans openly, and that would give the resistance even more encouragement to be able to take out the Israeli army. It's not going to be a quick process. I think everybody's agreed that if a war does erupt and the Israelis don't stop, then the resistance has pitched itself in for a long-term battle. And the idea is to slowly bleed Israel and to break their morale and to just get them to decide that really it's not a good option for ultra-racist, Nazi, fascist Zionists to be ruling a nation in the middle of West Asia where they do nothing but cause conflict and inflict misery and pain and death.
Okay, stay safe. Sayed, it's always a pleasure to check in with you and pick your brain on stuff, especially stuff this sensitive. Joining us from London, Sayed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister says Israel must immediately end its genocide in Gaza and humanitarian aid must enter the territory on a large scale. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remark in a phone call with his British counterpart. Top Iranian diplomat said the root cause of the current crisis is Israeli occupation. Amir Abdollahian said Palestinians are entitled to fight occupation under the law. He also touched on Britain's support for Israel, saying that London has to adopt a pragmatic approach to regional developments. British Foreign Minister, for his part, called for Iran's efforts to prevent spread of the war in the region. James cleverly also called the process of cooperation between the two countries important within the framework of diplomatic conventions. And Iranians have turned out in droves throughout the nation to hold rallies marking National Students Day, which is the anniversary also of the 1979 U.S. Embassy takeover in Tehran, also known as the National Day of the Fight Against Global Arrogance. Every year on November 4th, Iranians throng the streets to vent anger at Washington's hostility toward their country over the past four decades. In the capital of Tehran, protesters gathered just outside a building that used to be the U.S. Embassy. Addressing demonstrators, Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Qalibaf denounced the U.S. as the main culprit behind crimes being committed in occupied Palestine. He added Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu himself will perish in the atrocities that his regime has been carrying out against the Palestinians. He said operations by Resistance Front have exposed and shattered the Israeli regime's hollow power. And that's a wrap for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with President Raisi and his cabinet on August 30, 2023, on the occasion of Government Week. In the field of foreign policy, the government's dynamism in its foreign policy is very good. Becoming a member of two important international alliances, that is BRICS and SCO, in a short space of time was a very good achievement, and it is not only beneficial for the country, but it also shows a reality. Countries around the world do not do things without a reason. They don't invite everyone to just come and join. They do this based on the calculations they have made, and they accept a government based on their calculations. These calculations are very important. This shows that Iran is in a position where the members and the founders of these international alliances are interested in and sometimes even insisted on our beloved country's membership in these organizations.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Good things have also been done in the cultural sector, which of course should be increased both in quality and in quantity. And good progress have also been made in various other departments, the details of which you are already aware of. My recommendations to you is that if there are things that the administration has done that can make people happy, then let them know about these things. There is a big gap between the actual realities and what people perceive as realities. What they perceive as facts is genuinely far from reality of the situation. Try to reduce this gap. People should find out more about these realities. This requires work. It is not a simple task or an ordinary smooth progress. This requires work. It is not a simple task or an ordinary smooth process. This kind of work needs to be thought through. It needs expertise, and it requires the help of experts. Now, I would like to remind you of a few things. I have reportedly said that the country's main priorities are the economy and our culture. These are our top two priorities. As for the economy, our slogan has two parts this year. One is about controlling inflation, and the other is about increasing production.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Israeli regime's brutal war and genocide against Palestinians in Gaza has received widespread condemnation across the globe. Images of Palestinian infants, children, women, and other innocent civilians, including entire families, killed during attacks by Israeli regime forces have ignited anger in all countries. Now, backed by the United States and other Western regional powers, Israeli forces have dropped bombs on hospitals, schools, and places of worship. Now, these genocidal attacks by Israeli apartheid regime have so far left thousands dead and tens of thousands injured. The people of Africa, a continent that suffered the worst ravages of colonialism and racism for centuries, have historically supported Palestine. Africans have come out massively to voice support for Palestine and to condemn Israeli regime crimes against Palestinians. Masses in the continent are now demanding that their government should cut any relations they have with the Israeli apartheid regime. Now, will African governments listen to the voices of the masses? Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and this is Africa Today. This week, we continue focusing on the issue of the African people standing with Palestine amid the ongoing genocide by the Israeli apartheid regime against Palestinians in Gaza.
Africa standing with Palestine. Spontaneous protests are taking place across Africa to condemn Israeli apartheid regime's atrocities against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Israel started its brutal genocidal war in Gaza on October 7 after the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, launched the surprise Operation Al-Aqsa Flood against the colonial entity.
The people of Africa have come out to express unflinching solidarity with oppressed Palestinians while demanding a complete boycott of the Israeli apartheid regime. Recently, a peaceful protest was organized in the Kenyan coastal city of Mombasa to express solidarity with Palestinians.
To all of you who gathered here today amidst the scorching sun, you've shown solidarity with our brothers who are miles away, our brothers in Palestine. We tell them we are with you in both prayers and in person. Mine is the message to the aggressors. They've subjected our brothers to war crimes against humanity. What they're doing today is an extermination. Is an extermination of our brothers in Palestine. And we say to them, no, no, no injustice, not in our era. We tell them, down, down, Israel.
Down, down, Israel.
Down, down, America.
Down, down, America.
We stand with our brothers in Palestine.
We stand with our brothers in Palestine.
Now, for more on the firm resolve by African people to stand with Palestine, we have contacted Ms. Naomi Barasa. She's the chairperson of the Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement. She's also the former campaign director at Amnesty International in Nairobi. Thanks a lot for your time, madam, today.
Thank you so much. I am honored to be invited to your station to talk about the Palestinian question. Thank you so much.
We also have with us today Suhail Omar. He's a political analyst and a member of Kenyans for Palestine. Thanks a lot, Suhail, for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Now, since the start of the Israeli regime's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza, demonstrations in support of Palestine are taking place across Africa. Let's start with you, Naomi Barasa, there. What is the message of these solidarity demonstrations in Africa?
We have short-term and long-term messages. In the short term, we are calling for, of course, ceasefire on the bombardment. We are calling for Israeli government to open up Gaza for humanitarian support and total arms embargo in Israel, and then investigations on war crimes by Israel. But in the long term, we would like to say that the African people stand in solidarity with Palestinian sisters and brothers in this struggle against oppression and domination. For us, we have a common enemy, and this is something that for the African continent, we experienced firsthand, and we understand the brutality. We have seen that in Kenya, we've seen that in Algeria, we've seen that in South Africa, and many other African countries. So we really, really, really feel that we must prevail.
Now, the pro-Palestinian demonstration in Mombasa was unprecedented in terms of the large number of people that turned out to condemn Israeli regime's unfolding crime of genocide against Palestinian people. Here is one of the protesters speaking during the protest march.
Why are they doing this to Palestine? We are here solidarity for Palestine. We might be weak in weapons, but we are very strong in faith, and we shall overcome.
Now, let's bring in Suhail Omar. Now, can you tell us what was the significance of this major protest march in Mombasa?
When once we speak about being in solidarity with the Palestinian people, it means us in ourselves as Kenyans, we're also rejecting this expansion of the Israeli war war mechanism. Because once we talk about Israel, what we know is an establishment of violence, because all the methods of violence that target Palestinians always end up coming back to different demographics, because Israel is training, funding, and arming this different police forces around the world. So the Mombasa protest was quite a significant move, where Kenyans are not only rejecting Israel's annexation and collective punishment and occupation of Palestinian land, but it's quite a key effort to show that Kenyans are in transnational solidarity with the Palestinian people, and we support whatever decisions they take to fight for their land as enshrined within international law and protected by the UN Human Rights Charter.
President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa said in a speech at the Cairo Peace Summit that South Africans can relate to the suffering of Palestinians. Let us listen in, and then Ms. Barasa will give us her take.
As South Africans, we can relate to what is happening to Palestinians. Our people waged a brave and courageous struggle to achieve their freedom, and were subjected to untold suffering, just like the Palestinians are going through. But we had courageous leaders who were able to set aside their differences and sued for peace, and were able to bring the abhorrible system of apartheid to an end.
As Africans, we wholeheartedly endorse this sentiment by President Ramaphosa. As I mentioned earlier on, the Palestinians have the right to self-defense, self-determination, and therefore resistance against oppression and domination is a human right. And as Africans, we earnestly hope that our leaders can transform these noble words of Ramaphosa to concrete actions. And we actually appeal to Ramaphosa to ensure that South Africa leads the entire Africa and the African Union in actualizing these words and making sure that this is achieved. Because as the masses, as the civilians, we are increasingly becoming impatient. We want to see tangible actions, and we don't want lip services. And we also do not want our leaders to ally themselves to the oppressor. And therefore, we endorse Ramaphosa's sentiments, and we only wish that this can be concretized.
The Israeli regime has not spared places of worship in its genocidal war on Palestinians in Gaza. The Israeli regime bombed the historic Church of St. Porphyrios in Gaza, one of the oldest churches in the world. A member of the Islamic movement in Nigeria says attack on places of worship is an indicator that the Israeli regime is fighting humanity.
People are still saying Israelis are acting on defense. What defense? Yesterday, if you feel they are killing Muslims, yesterday they went and destroyed a church of 1,600 years. They have destroyed it yesterday. Today, they have attacked another mosque of 1,400 years of existence. So they are killing Muslim, Christian, whoever they see, they kill him. It's Zionism that is fighting humanity.
South Africa has long been an advocate for the freedom of Palestine, likening the plight of Palestinians to its own under an apartheid regime that ended in 1994. Now, Naomi, how important was the phone call between South Africa's foreign minister and the leader of Hamas in terms of Africans, and particularly South Africans, standing with Palestine?
Israeli government has cut off supplies, water, food, electricity, and fuel, and blockaded Gaza, causing collective punishment to the people of Gaza. This is a violation of international law. And so this initiative by the Minister of Foreign Affairs is really commendable, and it serves as litmus test to our solidarity as Africans and the imperative that we translate our solidarity into meaningful actions and support for an oppressed community like Palestine. So Palestinians have demonstrated that they have capacity to continue resisting, and we can only strongly believe in this by promptly submitting our available resources to them, and which for now can be in terms of humanitarian support, and call upon the global community to also put pressure. So for us, this is very, very important. And we even ask the African Union, beyond that, to suspend all relationships with the Israeli apartheid regime, and also ask African Union to spearhead and coordinate executing of airlifting of humanitarian aid to Palestine. So this is, for us, very commendable.
Well, we now take a short break before we continue our topic on how the people of Africa are standing with Palestine. Stay with us.
Africa standing with Palestine.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Muslim organizations in Nigeria have also raised concerns over Israeli atrocities in Gaza. The organizations call on the federal government to review its relations with the Zionist regime of Israel over its violation of international laws and the rights of Palestinians. Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa, and indeed, Africa's largest economy.
A member of the Islamic movement in Nigeria says they have been supporting the liberation of Palestine for over 40 years.
The Islamic movement has been calling for justice for the Palestinians for the more than four decades. It's not just now that the Islamic movement started. The Islamic movement started from the beginning. It's one of the frontiers of calling for justice.
Clearly, the Israeli regime is under siege and unwanted in Africa. What impact will the Israeli atrocities in Gaza have on the regime's unending attempts to infiltrate Africa?
I think clearly the Israeli entity is failing and is falling apart slowly by slowly. And that's why they're fighting to establish a lobby in Africa, number one, to establish this fallacious popular vote within the United Nations General Assembly. And even just recently, we saw the fight where the African Union chair had invited Israel to be an observer state, which was also rejected by many of the African states. But away from that, I think the new establishment and what's happening in Gaza is bringing light, and where people are actively rejecting their state's efforts of normalization with Israel.
South Africa's ruling ANC First Deputy Secretary General Nomvula Mokonyane has called for the Israeli embassy in South Africa to be closed. Muslim leaders in Kenya also called on their government to cut ties with the Israeli regime. Let's take a listen.
Send away the Israeli ambassador immediately and recall our ambassador in Israel to come back as a matter of solidarity to the people of Palestine.
Now, this question is for Ms. Barasa. Now, will African leaders listen to the voices of the masses regarding cutting ties with the Israeli apartheid regime?
We clearly see diplomacy is not working, and therefore, can we take other opportunities and other strategies to just make sure that there is enough pressure on Israel to ensure that Israel respects human rights and humanity can mobilize to challenge oppression and injustice? Because at this point, we can't say that that diplomacy is really working. And for us, if the Israeli cannot comply with international law and it violates international law with impunity, then it's important that we just push for that, and that is taken. And remember, furthermore, that Israeli has received support from some veto-yielding powers in the UN Security Council. And for us, it is our historical duty, therefore, as the nations of the Global South, to stand in solidarity with, to stand for justice, but also in solidarity for Palestine. And this can only be through us pushing our governments to withdraw relations, diplomatic relations with Israel.
African countries are facing yet another round of higher costs, particularly skyrocketing fuel prices following Israeli regime's genocide and atrocities against Palestinians. Now, this factor is enough to push African governments to compel the Israeli regime to end its crimes on Palestinians. The leader of South African Economic Freedom Fighters Party, Julius Malema, recently led a pro-Palestinian rally outside the Israeli regime embassy in Pretoria. He called for the closure of all Israeli embassies in Africa. Let's take a listen.
These are terrorists here, and we can't legitimize the terrorists. We must never give them the respect that we give to the deputy ambassador of Palestine. These people here have got no respect for humanity and for life.
Now, this question is for Suhail Omar there. Now, do we expect African governments to heed this call and close all Israeli apartheid regime embassies in Africa?
The people have rejected it, and I do think tangible action will be seen and will be visible, even as it is being visible, because the people are actively rejecting not just the enabling of this of the Israeli violence against Palestinians, but they're also rejecting the government's efforts towards normalization. And it's very present with what's happening from the Mombasa protests to the protests in Nairobi today. And I know there'll be more protests during the week. So it's more of the people are actively taking back their power and using their voices to reject any efforts at normalization. And as much as the Israeli lobby tries to establish itself as an ally to Africa, Africans are aware that Israel is not our friend. Israel will never be our friend. And what we need at this moment is to see the freedom of the Palestinian people and the establishment of the Palestinian state away from Israeli mechanisms of violence.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last September said African migrants constitute a real threat to Israel's character and future as a Jewish state. His remarks came after at least 140 Eritrean asylum seekers were injured in Tel Aviv. Such statements have created an awakening in Africa on the racist nature of the evil Israeli regime.
I think it was a very significant statement because the Israeli mask is now falling apart, where a sitting prime minister can actively make such a xenophobic statement. But again, once we go from and understand the epistemologies of Israeli violence, we will see the forced sterilization of Ethiopian Jews who were immigrating to Israel. We will see the mechanisms of racism Black Israeli settlers are facing within Israel. So it's not something that shocked the world. It's something that made the world aware that Israel, number one, is a xenophobic state. Israel, number two, is a racist.
Despite the escape of Israeli regime officials from Rabat, Moroccans continue their protests until normalization with Tel Aviv is revoked. A Moroccan speaks here during a protest to condemn the Israeli regime's deadly airstrike that targeted a hospital in Gaza.
المفروض أنه بعيد كل البعد على أي أعمال حربية هذه الجريمة يتحمل مسؤوليتها أولا كيان الصهيوني المجرم وهو دليل على أنه ليس بدولة وإنما هو عصابة إجرامية وإلى زوال تتحمل مسؤوليتها أمريكا والدول الغربية التي تغطي على هذه الجرائم.
The people of Morocco are clearly diametrically opposed to the country's monarchy that has normalized ties with the Israeli regime. How will the Israeli genocide against the people of Palestine impact on the infamous normalization project with countries such as Morocco?
This form of being in solidarity with Palestine has in essence given many of us within African countries a voice, because the right to protest is always being minimized within the states where there's police violence. In any time there's any freedom of expression, there's freedom of protesting and demonstration. So it's a mechanism where we have to align ourselves and make sure that this is not just a fight for our voices to be heard. It's a fight for human rights. It's a fight for democracy on all fronts. So while I do know that the Moroccan government is really fighting for the normalization tactics, the people of Africa will reject it. And at this point, the people are the ones who have the majority of voice. Where if we continue allying together, and the Palestinian cause is bringing us together, we're seeing a rise in Pan-Africanism because of this. We're seeing a rise in transnational solidarities because of this. So the Palestinian cause is literally something that is bringing the African people together to say no to a colonizing power. So even with Morocco, the establishment of normalization will fall apart.
The African Union strongly condemned the Israeli regime's inhuman airstrike on Ahli Baptist Hospital in Gaza, which killed more than 500 people. As Ms. Barasa said, the people of Africa are saying condemnation is not enough and now want their countries to cut ties with the Israeli regime. Ms. Barasa, you have the last word. Now, what is hindering action by African governments towards cutting ties with the Israeli apartheid regime?
Historically, the African people have relied on their governments. And unfortunately, these governments, instead of listening to the people, they listen more to and prioritize the voice of diplomatic, their development partners, and the voices of other countries, which for us does not work so well for us. And so our mobilization in the Global South in Africa is to basically create a formidable voice that can, number one, organize people and mobilize us to ensure that our voices can be heard by our governments, and that our governments can take our intentions and these intentions influence foreign policies especially, but also our governments recognize that we are their voters, and therefore they go by our aspirations. And our aspirations as the African people are definitely deep rooted into our deep history of colonization. And so this must influence how our foreign policy is conceived.
Well, there you have it. African people stand with Palestine, and the governments in the continent need to be in tandem with the aspirations of the people that voted for them. Well, and that brings us to the end of yet another episode of Africa Today. Goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Ata, the host of this program. Within the studio, we have Sheikh Karimi to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh Karimi, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the establishment of an administration, government, or caliphate by the Shiite infallible imams. First of all, answer this question: were the infallible imams of the Shiite, after establishing a kind of administration, caliphate, or dynasty? If yes, why? And if not, why?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are two dimensions to this question when we are talking about the Imams alayhi wasalam establishing a government. The first dimension can be that, does Islam have any plan for establishing a government, for politics? And is it the right of the Imams of the Ahl Bidah alayhi wasalam to establish a government? So to answer this question, the answer is, of course, yes. The question is not about our Prophet, but we know that the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family established a government in the city of Medina. And many Islamic laws, which are mentioned in our jurisprudence, they are in need of having an Islamic government. So to establish a government is the right of the Prophet and the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, and one of their responsibilities and duties if they have the opportunity.
Yes.
For the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, we can refer to An-Nisa chapter 4 verse 59, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O the believers, ati'u Allah wa ati'u Rasula wa ulil amri minkum. Obey Allah, obey the Prophet, and ulil amr, those vested with authority. Yes. Now, the question is about ulil amr, and the fact that the first point in this verse is that Allah is telling the Muslims that you need to obey these ulil amr. And there is no condition, there is no limitation, which means that these ulil amr should be infallible, like the Prophet. So if they are fallible beings, if they are possible to make any mistake, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala shouldn't tell the Muslims that obey ulil amr without any condition.
Okay.
Even it is mentioned by some Sunni scholars that ulil amr should be infallible, because some of the Sunni scholars try to say that ulil amr is referring to the commanders in a war, for example, but this cannot be accepted because they are not infallible.
But does following the ulil amr necessarily mean that they must establish a government?
I will come to that. First of all, the point is that we need to obey ulil amr, and then I will come to the concept of establishing a government.
Yes.
So, as mentioned by the Shia scholars, as ati'ur rasul is referring to the infallibility of the Prophet, wa ulil amr minkum is also referring to the infallibility of the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt, and they are introduced in the narration. So, as people, we need to follow ulil amr. Now, what is amr? They are the possessors of an amr, an issue. According to some narration, one of the dimensions of this amr is the political government, and to establish, government. And also, when we refer to the life of the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam, we see that they considered establishment of a government, an Islamic government, a right for them. This is mentioned in many narrations by Imam Ali alayhi salam, and some narrations by Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So my first point is that to establish an Islamic government, first of all, Islam has a plan for politics, for establishing a government. And second of all, it is one of the rights and responsibilities of the Prophet and the Imams to establish a government if they have the conditions and situations ready.
That's right.
Now, the point is that the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam were not after establishing a government to just have a mundane power. This is a very important point. So for them, to establish a government is just a means for practicing the Islamic laws. It's not the goal. That is why sometimes they see that this is not a good means for that time and era to reach that goal.
Yes.
And that is why we see that the majority of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam were not able to establish a government. But the fact that they were not able to establish a government doesn't mean that they did not have the right. No, they have the right, they have the responsibility.
Yes.
But establishing a government is just a means, is not the goal. So in many cases, we see that the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam do not establish a government. Sometimes we see that this is the case for Imam Ali alayhi salam. In many occasions, the Holy Prophet introduced him as the caliph after himself. But for various reasons, Muslims chose Abu Bakr as the first caliph. The situations are introduced by Imam Ali alayhi salam himself in different sermons of Nahj al-Balagha. The most famous one in this regard might be the khutbah Sheikh Shaqiyya, the third sermon in Nahj al-Balagha. So on that very time, Imam Ali alayhi salam, for himself, of course, the right of caliphate belongs to him.
Yes.
And just 2 months ago, he was introduced as the next, as the immediate successor of the Prophet in Ghadir Khum. But now, because of the fact that the majority of the Muslims, for various reasons, they have chosen Abu Bakr, if he wanted to insist on his right as the caliph of the Muslims, then it was very likely for the whole religion of Islam to be endangered because of various reasons. I mean, we have some tribal issues, we have the threats of Roman empires and Iranian empires, we have the issue of some apostates and so on and so forth. Imam Ali Salam himself says that I thought about this issue that am I able to have a kind of uprising without any helper to take my right back or just to be patient. Then I realized that to be patient is closer to an action, a right action. That is why I remained patient, although it was very difficult. So that is one point.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs.